Associates podcast and my YouTube channel with my interview series with high-profile people that are in the mediation negotiation industry. Today I'm with Jane Gunn. Jane, thank you for joining me. And I'm going to quiz Jane on a few issues that she's come across in mediation. Mediation is something which is taking over. In fact, I understand that judges are asking for more and more mediation, Jane. Is that how it works?
Yes, it's taken us a while, but actually now many cases are referred to mediation or recommended for mediation by judges and particularly by lawyers who understand the process. So yes, it's taking off.
So what's the most exciting mediation that you've been in recently?
They're all interesting, Derek. Okay. And they're all confidential, so I can't tell you anything about, you know, give away the name of the client. But if you get a complex mediation, say, for example, a family business, if you think about a family business mediation where you've got not only a conflict about the business itself, but about, you know, family issues, that's very interesting to deal with because you've got so many different parties and different issues as well. So I've done a number of those.
So I imagine that's a bit like the Northern Ireland conflict, where you've got so many different interests, political ones, religious ones, etc., that it's very difficult to get under the skin of what's really going on and boil it down to two parties.
Yes, it's partly because you've got multiple parties. And the other interesting thing is that you've also got parties who are outside. You know, many conflicts, you've got parties who are outside the room who don't ever come to the mediation but have an interest in what's going on. Okay. So if you think of a family business, you might have a spouse or a brother or a sister who aren't part of the business, but they've nevertheless got an interest in what's going on and they'd like to, and they are influencing what's going on in the room, but they're not in the room. Mm. So that makes another dynamic, actually that's the case in many mediations. There are always people on the outside who influence what's going on but aren't there. So that's one of the interesting dynamics.
It really is, I can see that. So let's say you were doing a mediation here. Do you get everybody into the room to do it, or do you have them in separate rooms? How does it work?
Both. So we are sitting in a big room now around a big board table. That would be what we'd have as a joint meeting room, and we would have several sessions hopefully in the joint meeting room. We'd always have an opening session in the joint meeting room where we talk about how are we going to run this meeting? How are we going to run these sessions? I would set out the sort of process. We'd maybe agree on ground rules or values or however we were going to do that. But each party, and it could be several, would also have a breakout room. And when we weren't having joint sessions, they'd be in their breakout room. I might have private meetings with them there. So there's all sorts of combinations of meetings that can happen during a mediation. So sometimes you might just get lawyers together and they'll have a chat about the legal issues. Sometimes you get one or two parties who might want to have a private meeting. And then you might have these joint dialogue sessions all around one big table as well.
I've got to take you back to the beginning of this. So you get them all in one room and they're all growling at each other and daggers drawn. Is it really quite tense?
Pretty much at that stage, because they've probably never met me. Some of them have not met each other. So some of the lawyers either haven't met each other or don't know each other. Some of the parties don't know each other or they've got real issues and haven't seen each other. So correspondence flying between them has probably been quite adversarial to this point. It's probably been email or post-based. And if you look at some of the style of communication, it's been, you know, quite aggressive. So you start from there. And then most people come with what they call a sort of position statement. These are my rights, this is my legal position, which isn't where we want to go, really. We want to start with actually what are people's interests, where do they want to go for the future, not what happened in the past. So you start at a place that you want to move on from. And I always think people prepare badly in that I say you should be preparing for dialogue, not for war, and they come prepared for war.
Yeah. So do you say something like, I might say at the beginning of a training session that this is what we want to achieve at the end of today. Do we all agree? Or is that a
Well,
bit
I
too
always
upfront?
Ask them. So I practice a style of mediation which is more facilitative, and it's about asking them, what do they want? So what outcome do they want from today? Do they have any ideas? Do they have any ideas how they're going to make this meeting more effective? And then we move on to sort of looking at what really are the key issues, because it doesn't matter all the stuff that's gone on, and people will literally wheel into mediations boxes and boxes of papers that have built up over the time that it's been in in legal process, but you've got to narrow it down to, so what are the issues today, and where do you want to go from there? What does the future look like, and what do you need to do to get there? What are the simple actions, or, you know, sometimes it's who needs to pay who what and how much. But we tend to move on from, these are the strict legal rights or wrongs. You only go back to that if you fail at mediation. It's okay. Like I say, you take a day off the conveyor belt, and we talk about what are the options. If you go back on the conveyor belt, then it's important to know, of course, what your legal rights are.
So it's a bit like what I'd call a timeout, taking a timeout for a day. We're trying get away from all the baggage that's gone on and sort this out, sort your lives out and move on.
And we're very much looking then at, you know, what are the, how much has it cost you so far? So we do look at how much of your legal costs built up, but also, you know, what's the cost on your health of this carrying on? What's the cost on your family? What's the cost on your business? Because if you're trying to run a business and you've got a big litigation case hanging over you, how much is that impacting on your productivity? How much is that impacting on your ability to do your job effectively every day? It's massive, absolutely massive.
And I say to all my clients about negotiations, when they say, I'm going to sue them for the money back, I say, what's the emotional cost of doing that? What's the emotional cost of waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning thinking about it in a hot sweat or something?
Say to people, how would it feel if you woke up tomorrow and this was all over?
Yeah, and I say sometimes, what do you think that might cost in time in your life?
Yes.
Could that knock 5 years off your life? Because we all know that stress is a killer, really, depending on how you handle the stress and handling these things.
Reminds me of the dash for life, isn't it? It's the dash between your date of birth and, you know, if you think about how are we going to, are we spending that time on litigation? Is it worth it?
So going back, will the lawyers that have been involved be at the mediation?
Or? Yes, usually the lawyers will come. And so the solicitors who prepared the legal case will come. Often they instruct barristers, or, you know, they might bring a whole team. So in the biggest mediations I've been, you've got a whole legal team of senior QC, a junior counsel, solicitor, junior solicitor. You might have a whole legal team, but often it's one or two lawyers will come, and they've been preparing this case for 6 months, 6 years. You know, it could be a long time.
Yeah. And will they interfere? What are the rules? You're in charge. They probably do interfere, but what happens?
Their role in the mediation should be to advise their clients, but they often the clients themselves are reluctant to speak because they're so used to the lawyers having prepared the case for them. So often the lawyers will start, they'll speak on behalf of their clients, they'll present their legal case. I'm interested to hear from them, but I'm also interested to hear from the client, you know. What do you want? Because that's your legal case, but, you know, what you want, how you want this, you know, what dialogue should happen, it's interesting to hear from the client as well. So that can be, not always, but it can be an issue to separate the lawyer from the client and say, can the client actually speak as to what they want?
Okay, there may be some people watching this video, it might even be you, that's thinking, I'm spending a lot of money on lawyers at the moment on this thing, and you can make your mind up whether to settle, or you can make your mind up to go to mediation, and mediation is certainly a cheaper option, Jane, isn't it?
It's a much cheaper option. I have a phrase which I call solved by midnight, because often a mediation will start at 9 in the morning, and it'll be settled by midnight, and it might have been running as a legal case, as I say, for 6 months or anything up to 6 years. But you can take that case, no matter how long it's been running, and you can have it solved by midnight.
So you bring your suitcase to these sort of meetings, do you? Just in case.
Just in case, yes, you do. Yeah, so I have had occasions where we get locked in the building because we're still mediating and everybody's forgotten that we were there.
I remember when I was working for a mega bank that I got home at 1:15 in the morning on 3 days running. I couldn't think straight from about 7 o'clock, and then I got some energy back at about 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And it was still going on, and some people did it all the time. And it was a big law firm in London where we were, and I just couldn't figure it out. I was so tired. I'd worked 116 hours, and there's only 168 hours in a week.
It's crazy. It's interesting you say that, Derek, because, you know, for me as a mediator, I think it's important to think about people's comfort and their health and their well-being, because if people aren't negotiating effectively because they're tired or their blood sugar's low or their blood sugar's too high, it's something I've got to be aware of. Yes. And, you know, if you put people in a meeting room and only feed them biscuits and coffee, they're going to go ballistic.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got to, I always say to people, and I've done training sessions on this, think of yourself as hosting a dinner party. You've got to look after those people and make sure they're properly fed and watered, that they have breaks. I often book a meeting room with an outdoor space so they go for a walk. Because you can't just coop people up in a room for 10 hours and then go, well, where's the agreement?
Absolutely.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work at all. Jane, can I turn now to, we were both on the board of an organisation. It was, in fact, the Professional Speaking Association, and I was chairman, and I asked you to join the board because it was a very interesting situation, actually. We had 8 men and no women on the board, and I looked at this, I thought, this is a bit strange. And then I looked at some of the behaviours that were going on, which were a bit uncontrollable. I'd call them alpha male, I don't know if that's the right term. And you joined the board, and the first meeting you came at, you sort of describe some weird behaviours. Can you remember those weird behaviours and share them for the viewers and the listeners?
Well, look, I'm not going to be specific about the PSA, Derek, because I don't want to buttonhole anybody. But I think I have, as I've been saying to you before we started this video, I have sat in male-only meetings or male-only me for all of my career. And there are certain behaviours, and again, we don't want to be stereotypical about it, but there are certain sort of alpha behaviours that you do see when you put people around a board table, which aren't helpful, which is, it's about people. Every time someone comes to a meeting, they think, how do I get heard around here? How do I get people to listen to me? How do I get noticed? And I think you see that behaviour. I was a new member of another board recently, and 2 men had joined at the same time as me. And I decided my role in that meeting was just going to be sit back and listen. I'll just find my feet. But they quite obviously decided, I need to speak. I need to speak up. And they chose anything to speak up about,
sure,
just to be heard and to be noticed. And I think there's a real issue, I think, you know, about how do people behave around board tables generally, in joint meetings generally, and how do you temper that behaviour? How do you manage that behaviour? And there's various techniques. I mean, I'm very keen at the moment on values rather than ground rules. One of the things we learnt in our mediation training was set ground rules. So you'd maybe say, as a mediator, I'm running this meeting, there are several ground rules, one of which is nobody speaks over the other, the others everybody gets a chance to speak. But I've moved on from there a bit, Derek, and I think I'm much keener that people set their own ground rules. In other words, so I'd say to the meeting, how does everybody feel? Is there anything anybody's concerned about? How do you feel this meeting would be most effective? Does anybody want to say anything about that? And somebody'd say, well, I think it'd be much better if I'm worried about, you know, so-and-so's over there going to speak over me. So we'd say, well, you know, we'd set the rule because somebody'd come up with that. So I don't so much impose rules and talk much more about values. What values do people have? You know, if courtesy is a value, for example, then we agree that we're all going to treat each other courteously. And then anybody around the table can say, actually, I didn't like the way you spoke to me just then. That didn't seem very courteous. And you go, yeah. No. And then the person would say, no, actually, so I'm sorry. I didn't realise it sounded like that. And another technique we use in mediation that I use a lot is just reflecting back what people have said. Because sometimes if you reflect back what someone said in the way they said it, they go, oh, I didn't mean it to sound quite like that.
And you use, like in NLP terms, use the exact language,
yes,
the exact words, the
exactly,
exact language, the exact voice,
exactly,
tonality.
And so you're not only making everybody else, around the table hear what was said, the person who's just said that thing is hearing themselves back and thinking, I didn't realise I sounded like that.
That's very powerful, isn't it?
It's very, very powerful. And I'm finding that's more powerful than setting ground rules, because people are self-monitoring, they're not being told. So I don't like to be authoritative.
Sure.
I like to be collaborative.
Now, on my social media channels, I have a lot of women. I'm pleased to say it's a very mixed
very
group.
Good. Yeah.
Tomorrow's International Women's Day.
Yes.
And what advice would you have for women moving in various industries? Some are more male dominated than others, but when they need to assert themselves, what advice would you give them?
We've talked about this, haven't we, Derek? There are so many things. I think actually it's just important to be confident in yourself. And I think if you are confident, we've talked a little bit before we came on video today about body language. But, you know, literally body language, you know, if you sit up straight in your chair, if you want to make a point, if you look people in the eye, the body language is very important. So don't be a wallflower if you want to be authoritative. I think, you know, saying what you want in fair language, so you don't need to be aggressive, you don't need to be adversarial, but you just need to say what you're trying to say, why you think and feel it's important, what your intention in saying it is. Just be very clear what your outcome is. If you use clear language, if you use some of the skills of mediation, like reflecting what you're hearing from other people and just listening, and if you show you're listening to people and you actually pay attention to people, you can't go far wrong, I think.
And we did talk beforehand on about Amy Cuddy, AmyCuDdy, for those of you that are interested. Look at her TED Talk, yes. Which has had 30 million views. Wow. And she talks about putting yourself in the right state,
yes,
before you go into
very
the
much.
Meeting. And people often rush into the meeting. They don't think where they're going to sit. They don't get there early. They don't just go to the bathroom, check themselves out, make sure they haven't got involved in the traffic. The traffic was terrible just now coming here. And then Amy Cuddy says, and she's one of the top young female psychologists in America, and she's a professor at the Harvard Business School, and she says by just doing this body language, which is obvious, making your body bigger, just like a cat or a dog does under yeah. threat to make themselves feel more confident, it will increase the chemicals in your brain, the hormones, whatever we want to call it, by up to 30%. Now, I'm an open-minded skeptic. I've tried this. I've walked across the park early in the morning for a meeting in my local coffee shop, just like this for a bit. It makes you feel better. And I found it worked. And I went, yeah. Well, of course it works. Because yeah. if you stand up, my mum used to say to me, stand up straight, Derek. Or put your head up.
Put your head up.
Yeah, where did all that come from?
And you know, one of the things I've noticed in our board meetings and other board is that so many people have their mobile phones, they have their laptops, they're looking down all the time. And so it's, you know, the fact if you look up and they're not paying attention, they're not actually actively listening to other people around the table. And I just think that's a really bad behaviour. Habit, if you like,
absolutely.
That people have adopted, and actually they pretend they're looking at their board papers, but if you look into their screen, they're answering their emails. So, you know, we've all got some behaviour to be accountable for in that we're not actively taking part in meetings anymore these days. And you know, maybe there's something to be said for sort of you know, settings and values around active participation.
Yeah, I'm just going to mention a couple of things. A friend of mine's a chief executive of a company, and he told me confidentially that he was checking his emails in a board meeting, and the chairman sent him a text telling him to stop checking his emails across the boardroom table to save embarrassing him. Secondly, it's gone email mad. There's only been smartphones for about 10 years, and yeah, people have gone email mad. I was
mad
at a conference yesterday, and somebody said, what's the first thing everybody does when they get up in the morning? And he said, check your phone. So if you're going to send out tweets, send them out at 6:30 in the morning, because they're going to get read. And I went, yeah,
yes.
That's right.
But how much earlier do we have to get up each day?
How odd is that? How is it changed? And there's something called text neck. I don't know if you come across this.
It's
kind of like repetitive strain injury from doing that. And how can you feel confident when you're doing
down. That?
So back to what my mum said, you know, look up.
Yeah, I agree. So, you know, yes, technology, and we in one of the boards that I'm on, we have a number of international colleagues Skyping in, or they're on a video link. So you've got them on screen. So that's also... And then they don't realise they're on screen, so they're eating a packet of crisps in the middle of the meeting and munching away because they haven't put themselves on mute. There's all sorts of stuff which goes on. It just is interesting. If you were to measure, and I don't know how you would, actually how much time people are really actively engaged in the content of the meeting. And I think that's another thing, actually, is in mediations or meetings, you know, sometimes we think we're being very macho in carrying on. But we know from TED Talks that the limit of someone's attention is 17 minutes. 17 after minutes. 17 minutes, you should be stopping and standing up and having a break. But if I suggest a break after 17 minutes, people go, why don't we carry on? I have had lawyers say to me, surely we're not having a lunch break. We need to just plow on with this.
That's the alpha male.
I need lunch. Yeah.
Ego trip again, isn't it? And we all know if you take a break, you go out and smell the roses, you're going for a walk around the block, take a few deep breaths, you're going to be so much more productive. In fact, I've been telling people, some of the people that follow me, to try 17-minute meetings. Mm. And 17-minute meetings with yourself. So spend 17 minutes on a task. Go for that task. And then set your alarm and then stretch your back and then maybe have a coffee and then come back and go for another 17 minutes.
In fact,
I'm running a, Graham Jones and I are running a masterclass, and we're going to do it in 17-minute chunks. And just see how it happens.
I'm doing the same. I did a workshop last week and I said to the guys in the workshop, I'm just going to set my thing for 17 minutes and see where we've got to. And I'm just about to plan another workshop for a couple of weeks' time, and I'm going to do it in 17-minute chunks, or no more than 20-minute chunks.
Yeah. Well, I think we've probably been on for 17 minutes today, so it's probably time for me just to summarise, but thank you very much. Yeah. So Jane's explained to us about the mediation and mediation process and how it works, getting people into a room, stop paying lawyers' bills, get the energy back up and getting on with your life. Secondly, I asked Jane about board meetings and dealing with board meetings and people that talk over you and things like that, where you need perhaps a structure. And thirdly, a few tips there, 17-minute meetings, etc., that you can deal with. And also for ladies, on International Ladies Day, which is becoming more and more prominent, how to be a little bit more assertive, get yourself in the right frame of mind, the right state, and a few tricks which will make anybody, male or female, feel more confident. So Jane Gunn, thank you so much for joining me.
I hope
you'll do it again for me some other time, maybe in a year's time.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Derek. Indeed.